Our next guest is fascinating. Why do we refuse to get rid of junk that we haven't used in years? Why is it so hard for some of us to lose weight? Why is it hard to start saving money? Why do we eat more than we need in an all-you-can-eat buffet, even though it makes us feel miserable and we know it? MIT professor Dan Ariely says it is simply because we are humans, and being humans, we are all predictably irrational. Oh, wait a minute. Predictably irrational? I wonder if that can help to know. Professor is a behavioral economist who says misguided behavior is neither random nor senseless, and it can be corrected. Read how in his new book, Predictably Irrational, The Hidden Forces That Shape Our Decisions. Professor Dan Ariely, welcome to the Bob Rivers Show. Hello.
Morning. Good to be here.
Did I get your name pronounced right?
Yeah, quite good.
All right, thanks. So this is fascinating because, I have tons of things I'd love to work on about myself, and I have some success, and every once in a while a major thing will happen in my life, and I'll turn something around. But for the most part, I just go through every day thinking, you know, I'm determined not to do something or to do something, and then I look back and take inventory in the previous weeks, and I realize that, as Popeye used to say, I am's what I am's.
You know, it's interesting. There are many traps that we see ourselves doing over and over, and yet we don't seem to be able to correct it. So the problem of vowing to go on a diet and going to a restaurant, and then the waiter comes with a dessert tray and you get the whiff of the creme brulee or the chocolate souffle and you get tempted. But there are also many traps that we just don't see ourselves walking into, and we do those repeatedly.
Speaking of habits, by the way, why is it that a German accent from some psychiatrist guy is always soothing? Is there some reason for that?
You got round glasses and a little goatee thing.
Oh. That's right. That's all images of good things happening, right?
Is that Freud? Is that where I'm getting that?
By the way, that's an interesting point in general, because it turns out that the expectation, what you expect to happen, actually change reality. So, for example, we sold energy drinks to students when they came to the gym one day. And we sold it to them at either full price or at a discounted price. And when we sold it to them at the discount price, they automatically expect things to be worse. And indeed, they exercised less and felt more tired as a consequence of that.
Huh. But when you sold them the expensive, and in your book you talk about the power of a 1 cent aspirin is nowhere near the power of a 50 cent aspirin. That's the expectations game.
That's right. Okay. And the interesting thing is about expectations is that they actually have the power to change the reality we experience. I'll give you another example from beer. We gave students two cups of beer, one regular beer, one beer with balsamic vinegar. And then when we asked them which one they prefer, the vast majority preferred the one with balsamic vinegar. It was just tasting better to them. But when we told them up front that one of them had balsamic vinegar, it wasn't blind tasting. We just told them they hated it. And no matter how much they tasted, they couldn't get over the idea of balsamic vinegar. It's not that balsamic vinegar made it worse. It's the idea of balsamic vinegar made it worse.
Wow. There was a study last week we quoted where a study of people who were on Prozac and other antidepressants revealed that in a blind study, two-thirds of them did just as well with a placebo as they did with the antidepressant. Now, this is an actual, real drug that acts on people. How could that be?
That's right. Actually, there's been a lot of reports about these things over the last few years. What people fail to realize is that placebo is real. And the real placebo we understand is placebo for pain. So I'll give you an example. When a physician comes to inject you with a painkiller, your body prepares for it, and your body actually secretes a substance that is very much like morphine. You know, something that you can't get over the counter. You know, our body can secrete that stuff. By the way, the reason we can enjoy recreational drug use is because we have this substance inside of us. So some people refer to placebo as just psychology, but in fact, it's the body preparing for the next stage and changing our own physiology. So placebo is not nothing. It's just recruiting our own amazing the amazing ability of our body to heal itself and to do all kinds of things. The same thing happens with Prozac. The moment you take the pill, your body automatically starts secreting stuff that helps you deal with those things.
So is there a possible way for you to have a sensible conversation with your body and say, dude, recruit on my command. You don't have to be fooled into it.
Yeah, you know, that would have been great, wouldn't it?
Yes.
That'd be a no.
That'd be a no. But what solutions do you offer in your book?
Well, you know, it turns out that there is one way to be rational and many, many ways to be irrational. So there's no silver bullet for irrationality. But if we take the topic of placebo, you know, placebo is actually a wonderful thing. You know, it has no side effect, unlike standard medications. So to the extent that we can actually harness placebo and increase the trust and pay more attention to the medications we take and actually try to boost that placebo effect, we would be better off.
In other words, if I read that a 1% aspirin is as effective as a 50% one, if I have that knowledge, then I could take the 1% aspirin and go, you know what, Dr. Ariely has convinced me of this, so now the 1% aspirin will be just as effective, and it will.
That's right. So you want, it turns out that when you think consciously about the effect of price, it can actually go away.
Is that why this new age stuff, this, you know, the people sit around, meditate, hot yoga, all that stuff, they, like a lot of people look at that stuff and go, that's a bunch of hoodoo, voodoo, you know, stuff. And then other people who, when they do it, they go, dude, I'm taking control of myself. Yeah. And I'm doing it with my own body and it's actually working.
Yeah, you know, I for many years made fun of everybody who does this stuff. But the trick is that the things we've learned is that very small things matter, and our beliefs do change reality. So I don't think I could ever do acupuncture and get better because I just don't believe in that stuff. But I do think that if I believed, I could be helped for it. And that's kind of the conundrum.
Dan, does that mean then that we can essentially shape whoever we want to be? In other words, expand. I know you're saying acupuncture is not something you can do because it's not a skill set you possess. But can we picture the kind of body we eventually want, or the kind of capabilities we want, or the kind of life that we want just by thinking of it?
You know, that's a little bit too extreme. I think, you know, we find some effects. I wouldn't go as far. I mean, it's possible. We don't have evidence.
He's a little skeptical, even for a doctor who wrote a self-help book. Yeah. Hey, you know, I didn't believe in acupuncture either.
Yeah.
But I went, and I thought, oh, at the very least, it'll be a soothing experience.
Uh-huh.
Much like listening to you speak. And it was a very sweet Asian lady who talked very soothingly about the, you know, balance and all of the things of the body and how your body, she almost did the whole body as a temple speech. And I got better afterwards. And I said, wow, okay, so I go back.
Yeah. You know, that's the interesting thing. And was it the acupuncture, or was it your beliefs that this was a good thing? And
well, but I didn't believe that it would work, but I believed that I would be soothed by it, and just being soothed seemed to put me in a state where my body, as you would say, maybe healed itself.
Yeah. You know, I have to tell you, I
think you should try acupuncture, Doc. You should, for a guy like you who writes a book like this, you shouldn't have such a closed mind.
I've got an open mind, baby, yeah.
I think you should go today.
I'm a little busy today. I'll have it tomorrow.
You're a very skeptical guy. You've written this whole book about how little things matter a lot.
Yeah.
There's a little needles. You're afraid of needles, aren't you?
No. You know, I was in hospital for 3 years from explosions with burns. I'm not really afraid.
You're not afraid of hospitals.
No,
okay.
No, nothing.
Wow, how did you get burned?
I got burned in an explosion from a flare in Israel many years ago.
Wow.
And actually, my whole interest in behavioral economics started from looking at the irrational behavior of the nurses around me. You know, in the burn department, the big question is, how do you take the bandages off the burn patient? Do you take them off slowly over a couple of hours but with low momentary pain? Or do you take them off quickly and making it shorter duration but higher intensity of pain? And it turns out that the nurses thought that the shorter version with ripping the bandages off was a better approach. And when I got out of the hospital, I started doing experiments in the lab when I would bring people in and I would check their pain. I would hurt them in different patterns and different duration, and I would figure out what makes the pain worse and better. And what I found out was the nurses were wrong. I found out that, you know, even though they had a lot of experience and a lot of good intention, I would have had less pain if they would rip the bandages slower over a longer period of time, but with each moment being less painful.
It's funny, moms seem to know that. Moms seem to know rip it, take a bandage off real quick.
Even the guy, the gal who waxes my eyebrows knows that.
No, but that's wrong, actually.
Interesting.
I think
by the way, let me say one more thing for clarification. When you have hair, things change in the dynamics of ripping bandages off because the hair root gets out much quicker with less damage.
Uh-huh.
But so with other pain that don't have hair, it's slightly different. But the nurses were wrong. They didn't know how to do it. And the question was, how could good individuals with good intentions and a lot of experience get things wrong? And from that point on, I started looking at other things that experience and good intentions don't necessarily fix how we make decisions.
I'm looking at the back cover of your book, and I see your picture, Dan, and no goatee. I'm disappointed.
No. I only have hair on half of my face.
Yeah.
Now, what's the experiment you did concerning Social Security numbers, and somehow our number will tell you how much you would be willing to spend on an item?
That's right. So we got a big group of people to tell us the last 2 digits of the Social Security number, and they indicated whether they would pay that amount of money for a product, yes or no. And then we did an auction for that product, and everybody submitted their bids. And then the people who won the auction paid and got their product, and everybody went home. And we calculated the relationship between people's Social Security numbers and their willingness to pay. And it turns out that people with high Social Security numbers were willing to pay much more, sometimes double, than people with low-ending Social Security numbers. Now, this sounds crazy that you were endowed when you were born with some proclivity to pay a lot and to pay a little. And indeed, it's not about your Social Security number. It's about the fact that we got people to think about the decision first in terms of some arbitrary number.
Right, I got
it. And when they came to the second decision, they also thought about their first decision. It couldn't escape their mind, and they kept on thinking about it.
So if Madison Avenue gets a hold of your book, we're all going to be driving around and putting on our face whatever they want us to, right?
I hope not, but I think in some sense we do that. Think about how Starbucks convinced us quite a few years ago, to start paying so much more for coffee.
Right.
That was a real achievement for them.
From 50 cents to $4.
Right. And here is the thought experiment you can do. Imagine that when Starbucks started, they would have had the same coffee quality as when they started, but would they have the layout of the store that looked very much like Dunkin' Donuts, and they would have sold donuts. How successful do you think they would have been? It would have been very hard for them, right? We would have compared their prices directly with Dunkin' Donuts.
Right. We would have gone, what's this? They've got to be nuts.
That's right.
A dozen donuts and a coffee? $30? I'm out of here. I got it. Now, you have a chapter about sex, too, the influence of arousal, why hot is much hotter than we realize. Am I interpreting that to mean that we are moved around by sexual desire much more than we think we are?
Yes, and not just sexual desires, all emotions. So we all understand that when we get emotional, we change slightly. What we don't understand is the extent to which we change. We don't understand how really different people we become. So to do this, we got a group of people to tell us what would be their sexual preferences when they're aroused. And we gave them a list of all kinds of activities. What's the age of the people who are listening to this show?
Are you asking how safe it is to talk?
Thank you.
Yeah. We're somewhat family-friendly, but we can talk as long as we use code, adult talk.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So we asked them for all kinds of activities that range from contact with humans to non-humans, from different types of activities about their sexual preferences. We also asked them about condom use, and we also asked them about to what extent they would go to get sex, including would they tell a woman you love her if they don't, getting somebody drunk, drugged, and so on.
That's our audience.
Now, they did this. Yeah. You did this anonymous, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Now,
what did you find out?
Some of the people, they all were in a cold state, a non-emotional state, and they predicted what they will do when they're in the hot state. And they basically said they will not have a very interesting sexual appetite. They will always respect women and always use condom. Then we took the same people, but also different people.
You didn't take them out to a dance club, did you?
Got them all fired up.
Wait.
Yep.
And we asked them the same questions, but this time we also gave them a laptop with some pornography, and we asked them to self-stimulate. And once they got to a certain level of erection,
I couldn't take it any longer. My God, I was crazy when the feeling came upon me like a tidal.
What? You know that song, the Meatloaf song?
No.
It's perfect.
It's great.
I'll check it out.
It's called Paradise by the Dashboard Light. I'm sure you've done some dashboard experiments.
Once they got to a certain level of erection, we asked them the same questions. Now, the people in the hot state and the cold state should give you the same answers if they know themselves. But the results show that people just don't know themselves. In the hot state, they said they would not respect women. They said they would, STDs are not that frightening. And they had a much more interesting and varied sexual preferences. Now, what this says in the more general term is that once emotion takes over us, we change to the extent that we can't appreciate. And one way in which this plays, of course, is in sex behavior. So imagine a kid that is vowing with his parents to what they call just say no, don't have sex.
Mm-hmm. Or drugs.
Or drugs. And then the kids get aroused. They just say no, change to just say yes,
just say
and
now.
They also don't have a condom with them because they don't understand that in the hot state they will really change their behavior.
Well, that's the argument for carrying protection and being prepared for a decision you expect maybe you won't have to make, but in case you do. Interesting stuff. I'm going to read your entire book cover to cover. Dan, you are a fascinating guy.
Thanks a lot.
And I got to know, knowing all of this as you do, you know, in your private life, and are you married?
Yeah, I'm married. I have two kids.
Two kids. Are you fairly normal when you get home, or do you have a trampoline in the bedroom?
I think I'm fairly normal. My wife will not necessarily agree, but I think so.
Sounds pretty normal to me. Dan Ariely, the book will be on our website, bobrivers.com, and it's called Predictably Irrational, The Hidden Forces That Shape Our Decisions. Dan, thanks.
Thank you very much.
Get some acupuncture.
Okay. Come on!
All I have to say is thanks a lot, media. Britain's Prince Harry was secretly fighting on the front lines in Afghanistan until the U.S., Australia, and Germany all had websites that reported that he was there.
He was fighting secretly as
a
soldier?
For the last 2.5 months, he was on the front lines as a lieutenant. And the Ministry of Defense had already made an agreement with international news organizations to keep the deployment of the 23-year-old a secret until he got back. He did make a few comments to the press. This is what they ran. This is a clip that they ran on NBC's Today Show.
I don't think there's any words to sort of describe it. It's much better being out here experiencing it rather than hearing all the stories of people coming back.
He also said it's the closest thing he will ever feel to being a normal person.
You do the job. Yeah, everyone's the same. Everyone's life is as important as everybody else's.
It's admirable, or is it just a ploy and he's finally getting outed, which is what he intended all along?
I think this is a wonderful story, and it's not a ploy. I think for a potential leader, he's second to William. Okay, he may never be the king of England, but God forbid something should happen to his older brother, he may one day be the king of England. And that, you can argue, is a figurehead position in the parliament that makes all the decisions. But, give me this, if a leader has served time in the boots of a combat soldier, he understands what it means to send someone to war. President Bush never bothered to serve time in the boots.
President Clinton cut and run, too.
A lot of presidents. And I'm not making this as a slam.
That's why they wanted to survive to be president.
This isn't a slam on President Bush. Okay, but hear me out.
Or Clinton.
If a guy has never served in the boots of a combat soldier, he is more inclined to easier to send someone off to war. Eisenhower would have thought about it more, getting us into a war, than somebody who had never served. So here's a chance for a potential leader of a nation.
I don't know that I agree with that.
Okay.
But I mean, it depends on the individual person. No, what you first said.
Okay.
I don't know whether, as some people are very good at understanding what other people are going through. Some people just aren't good, and it doesn't necessarily have to do with their experience.
Well, the Native Americans have often said, walk a mile in a man's moccasins.
Yeah, that can work.
That bears true, yeah, and I think it often does.
But it's not mandatory.
I'm not saying it's mandatory either, but it can help. If a guy's going to lead a country, if he has the opportunity to see what a soldier feels like, he may be a more humane leader down the road. He may be less quick to send people off to their to battle, to die. He may be. So here's a chance.
Maybe or maybe not.
Maybe not. So here's
okay,
a chance
so
for a guy.
Maybe or maybe not. It's hard to make a decision.
Or finish a sentence. Here's a guy who has a chance to learn something that may be very valuable to him as leader of a country. And our media thinks they have the right to tell everybody and know everything. This free speech, which is I give you, is a great right to have. But is that more important than maybe a leader learning a very valuable lesson?
Well, in serving his country. I mean, it's such a different culture.
Oh, okay, now this battle I love to take on
Thank
with you.
You.
The media has a right to report whatever it finds.
I think
that's what media is.
I think there are times when the common good is greater served by keeping Matt Drudge.
Maybe, maybe not.
Story. Okay.
Well, all right.
Hard to see.
Good argument.
You cannot say for certain, and you can't muzzle the media.
That's exactly his point. You can't say for certain
right.
that everything should be reported. So that argument works for both sides. And there are many secretive documents that we don't see that aren't released to the public that have to do with the way our nation is run because it would harm the security of our country. And this is the same thing.
Yeah, but you can say for certain that censoring media is very dangerous.
I'll give you that. And I'm not trying to make a blanket statement about tell us everything or tell us nothing. But this is one instance where it was probably better that we not know Harry was on the front lines for his own personal safety and for his potential as a good leader. That we don't need to know.
Well, there'll be a lot of people that think that.
Not just tools like me?
No, I didn't. Is it okay if I disagree with you? You look at me if I disagree with you like I'm terrible. I disagree with you. I think the media needs to be open, and I think that's an established principle of humanity.
I would agree with that. But Drudge has this opinion that he's more important than the greater good.
Well, if you personally don't like Drudge, that's fine. But in terms of the media, stuff like this will get out. I think that's like trying to tell a kid to say no in the heat of passion. The media
right.
is aroused by this stuff.
Well, they had come to an agreement with the international media's case. He said that they wouldn't out this story.
Well, this is nothing new. I mean, they were going to send him to Iraq, and they went through everything, and they decided he'd put his... It's also the rest of the troop. You don't want to put the people that you're fighting with at danger by being a walking target.
But this gets back to our privacy thing that we always disagree on, too. When you come to an agreement with the international media, what the heck is that? Is the international media someone's cell phone that can take a picture? Is the international media their MySpace page? You cannot, in this day and age, more so than any other, control information.
In this country...
Anywhere in the world.
I disagree.
Well, 400 yards from the Taliban.
The ability to control information is what's collapsing.
China does a pretty good job of it.
Well, I wouldn't
say so. I wouldn't say so. I mean, it's a source of a huge conflict, and it is collapsing.
I would argue that...
You can argue as to how much it's collapsed in various parts of the world.
I would argue that the international media may have more of a sense of responsibility than our media does.
Yeah. What is the international media?
Who did they have the agreement with that they wouldn't out Harry?
The only thing the story said was that there were, international news organizations.
Probably the BBC.
Okay.
The AP, I mean, there are a lot of newswire services that operate around the world.
But once it becomes, so you only want people with text messages to know, and you want to muzzle the companies that report news. Is that what you're saying?
I want to muzzle people like the Drudge Report, whose only goal is to get people to their website. That's his job one. Not Harry's safety, not the safety of the troops who are serving around him, who, like Joe mentioned, now are going to be at all costs.
Again, okay with you not liking Matt Drudge.
Okay, that's
what I'm saying. But if you want to prevent information from getting out...
I don't.
That's not what he's saying, I don't think.
I'm not. I'm saying that some information is best left unsaid. I quote the great Hall & Oates. Some things are better left unsaid.
Okay.
They embedded troops, or reporters with these troops, and they said, you're going to have a heck of a story. And they've got lots of him shooting a machine gun, calling in airstrikes, all kinds of footage.
Mm-hmm.
They said, wait on the story until he's served his time, because obviously the minute you report this, we got to get him out of there. And somehow it got leaked, and now they got to get him out of there. You know.
So you're saying that established big market media... was in collusion to protect a story and protect their exclusive.
No.
And in the modern day age, it somehow leaked out to a scuzz bucket like Drudge,
mm-hmm.
and that has you upset.
No,
that's not what I'm saying
at all.
Okay.
That was pretty close.
Actually, I think I'm close. All right, well, tell me how I'm wrong. I'm very open-minded.
Okay, because I can see that. That's where you're wrong. What I'm saying is that for the safety of the troops around him, for his own personal safety, and maybe for the betterment of a potential world leader, that it was more important to not let people know he was doing this until he got the experience.
Take Harry out of it. Take Harry out of the argument.
Yeah,
we have We have a lot of press that are embedded with U.S. troops that do not report on their location or the specific operations or the specific missions because it puts everybody in danger.
Absolutely.
So it's
so you
same
want Geraldo to be able to draw plays in the dirt?
You're making an excellent point. In military operations, when everyone is a number, we have discipline.
Okay.
When you insert a celebrity in our culture, you have arousal. I'm going to go back to this book.
Okay.
Dan Ariely.
Okay.
A celebrity automatically inserts arousal, and I don't know if that's the right phrase for me to use.
Well, he's look at him not as a celebrity, but as a military target. The leader of the potential leader of their country.
Look, I have no qualms with you saying this makes it more dangerous to him. Okay. I have no problem with that.
Well,
and that it should be better to keep him quiet. Well, but it's not practical. It can't happen in today's world.
Yes, it can.
How?
Because you make an agreement with responsible media outlets like the BBC.
What about the irresponsible ones?
Those are the ones I want drawn and quartered.
You want them shut down?
I want.
And how do we divide responsible and irresponsible media outlets into
which
a group?
Which side are we on?
Do you think we'll make the cut to get any information?
I do. I think you pull their.
We're
going
to come right back. Let's open it to the audience.
I would love that.
1-800-252-1025. Go ahead, Nick.
Yeah, I thought the whole thing was so staged. It was just unbelievable. I think the whole thing was just a PR stunt to give good press to the prince. It was so obvious.
Well, it's first off a requirement of his government that the members of the royal family serve time in the military. His father, his uncle, Prince Andrew, did it in the Air Force. His older brother did it as well, so did he. So it's not a stunt. It's actually
British
policy.
They made exclusive deals with certain media, though. Expose it when they wanted to expose it. And they put him on the front lines.
After.
That part is what you're talking about being a stunt, right, Nick?
Well, you could tell by the footage that he was just, he's in a layer of protection. He's like in the center ring of protection. If you know anything about military, especially in the Navy, you know that the aircraft carrier is the crown jewel, and that is surrounded by destroyers and submarines, and the chance of actually hitting an aircraft carrier is about it is about zero.
The footage I saw of him was not on an aircraft carrier.
No, he's making an analogy.
I'm saying this is what happened in Afghanistan. The prince is surrounded by layers and layers of protection. The chance of him actually getting hit is probably, down to zero.
So I'm not going to argue that point with you, but...
So they had to take special precautions for him and make it safer, right? You know what this
that
is?
That being said, well, just like an aircraft carrier is an asset worth protecting, so is a royal
right.
a family member.
And so, by the way, this gets back to an old argument that we've heard before about women in the military.
Yep.
Right.
And whether a woman would have to be treated special and whether a guy would, you'd run in and you'd save Jessica Lynch.
Because
but would you save Joe Sixpack,
right.
gas station attendant?
That's human
you
nature.
You wouldn't. Okay. So he definitely, from the point of view of other military grunts, this guy is an annoyance. He's extra, and he has nothing to do with the mission.
You also, having never served, don't understand the mentality of a military personnel, by the way.
Of course not.
It's an honor to protect someone like a prince. It's not an annoyance.
Well, his military nickname was
Bullet. Are you speaking for all military because your dad was in the military?
Only the one that raised me and beat it into my head.
Okay.
His military nickname was Bullet Magnet. That's what they called him over there.
Mm-hmm.
Your dad?
Yeah.
No, the prince.
Although my dad's got the scar tissue to earn that one, by the way.
Nick, thank you very much. Gary in Port Orchard, go ahead.
Hey, how you guys doing this morning?
Okay.
A little bit off subject, but a few minutes ago, you made a statement that, because I've listened to you guys since the old KZOK days, I don't think it's real true about yourself. You said that you're a very open-minded person, and I got to tell you, there's been many, 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 many times that you've been extremely opinionated.
Well, and that's a brilliant point, by the way.
And who are you talking about at that moment?
Well, it doesn't matter. It could be any one of us. But I know he means me. Gary, let me ask you a question. What's your definition of open-minded?
Open-minded, basically, is you're pretty much open to anybody's ideas, anybody's
opinion. Open to change your ideas just because someone else wants you to?
No, not necessarily want you to, but when you try to change the opinion that they're giving you, that makes you not so open-minded as you might think you are.
I'm not trying to change anybody's opinion. I will debate the merits of any opinion.
You made the merits, but it's from I guess it's maybe from the point of view of how maybe how I'm listening to you guys. It just sounds like you just sound like you're a little more. I don't know if I want to use the word negative or
self-righteous.
Well, self-righteous would be Spike talking about how the media should behave. In my opinion, that's self-righteous.
I would agree.
And I'm trying to be realistic and say these days with cell phone technology, everyone, every individual. See, you can lump the media into category and you could say the media is a bad thing and the media should behave themselves. But the fact of the matter is every single human being, maybe within our lifetime, maybe not, but certainly now in the United States, just about every single human being is a worldwide media broadcaster because he has the ability to text, whether on the internet or the cell phone. So the whole term media has been redefined. Do you get that?
Oh, yeah. I agree with that totally. It's just...
I agree with Spike that that it's misbehaving for a scummy media organization to blow the cool exclusive deal that the BBC had to do this print story the way they wanted to.
That's not what
it sucks in business when someone doesn't abide by contractual obligations. But I disagree with him that there's any way to manage this or protect it. And I think that they, clearly, as Nick, who was in the military, said, this is a publicity stunt, and it's not going the way they wanted it to go.
Well, like who was the bozo years ago that was diagramming in the dirt and saying where everybody was?
Geraldo Rivera.
Yeah, Geraldo. Well, that's pretty irresponsible, honestly.
I would agree, and he was actually lost his ability to be embedded with troops because of that.
And I agree.
That's
with,
how you deal with it.
I agree with you on that one too. I think Geraldo was extremely selfish, and I agree that Drudge is selfish. Spike and I don't disagree on the basic principle, but we disagree on whether you can control and regulate it.
Well, you could. You had an agreement with the international media outlets to not put his safety and the safety of those soldiers around him at risk just for a story.
And the agreement worked how well?
It worked until scumbag like Matt Drudge decided his website was bigger and more important than the public safety.
We agree on that.
And the greater good.
Yeah, it was. Cool. That's kind of irresponsible too, because it's. He's like a national treasure.
Well, do you think...
See, now he's coming to my side here.
Do you think that Prince Harry benefits from having military experience? That he has the potential one day to be the King of England.
Sure, exactly.
You think he benefits from having served side by side with actual combat soldiers?
He benefits, but he'll benefit more if they just leave him alone, let him do his job.
All right, Gary, I appreciate you calling, and I call anytime.
All right, guys, have a good one.
Bye. Tammy, hello.
Hi, good morning to you all.
All right, if people just tuned in, we are talking about Prince Harry, who has been outed on the front lines in, is it Afghanistan?
Garmisir, Afghanistan.
They had an exclusive PR deal with the BBC, and the Drudge Report went and outed him. Go ahead, Tammy.
Hi. As a soldier, I just think that I don't think what he did was a ploy, and I also think that the reporters should have kept it quiet, just like they do about certain locations and such. This guy is in a possible potential leadership should anything happen to his brother. And, you know, just to touch up on something else that you guys had mentioned, I think it should be a mandatory prerequisite that the leader of our country served in the military. It was something you guys said earlier, and I think it makes complete and utter sense. Not so much that they, being a soldier, will understand what soldiers have gone through, but just that they have a better understanding. I mean, what kind of training do they even get to understand what it's like to be in the military, what it's like to send the soldiers here and there? And it should be a prerequisite. I mean, that's just my personal opinion. I'm not saying I'm going to run for president because I'm in the military, but I think it should definitely be a prerequisite. I tend to have more confidence in our leadership knowing that they served in our military.
Well, lots of people feel that way, Tammy. I don't necessarily agree. I think it depends entirely on the person. Mm-hmm. You know, the person who leads Hewlett-Packard doesn't necessarily have to have manufactured printers. The person who runs Apple, on the other hand, has to really totally live and breathe the computer experience. So it can work either way. Really, people are such individuals that we try to lump them into categories.
Well, that's true. I just think that, you know, when it comes to being, for example, president of the United States, and
let's just pick
some random job,
a low-paying CEO job,
not too top of the hill, not too bottom.
Well, I just think if you look at the difference between today's leadership and yesterday's leadership, as far as presidents go, the experience and knowledge that they should have with them is deteriorating.
Well, the process is a popularity contest now.
It is. And
it's not really a detailed check of a resume.
Not about qualifications.
Well, it is to some. I mean, there are news people who do some of that. But, Tammy, thank you. So will they pull Prince Harry now?
They have.
They already
he's
have.
He's gone.
Yeah.
And will they still be able to produce the special? Will they be able to do all the all the things they had intended to do to make money for the BBC?
I would hope.
Let's hope so. Don't want to be an American idiot. Don't want a nation under the new media. Tom Simmons' comedy appeals to a wide audience. He's appeared on Black Entertainment Television and the Nashville Network. How about that? He's performed on the Montreal Comedy Festival and the Narcotics Anonymous International Convention. He's everywhere.
Wow, how old is that? How old is that intro? Where did you get that bio from?
Tom's also headlined clubs in pretty much all 50 states, and he's a regular with us, too, and an old friend, although we've seen him in various different points of history. Welcome back.
Thank you very much.
What's up with you?
You know, I'm telling jokes to going around the country. Last time I saw you guys, I was living in a motorhome. Now I have a 3-year-old son and an apartment. So, you know.
Things have really improved.
Yeah, I've taken my wife on a nice little ride.
How long has it been since you, first time you came on this show, how long?
It was, you know, right after the election, I think. So it's, you know.
2000?
2000.
The election in 2000.
Yeah, it was before 9/11, so. And then the second time was after 9/11.
I remember you had, like, really harsh Bush material.
Oh, yeah. I wasn't a huge fan. It was a lonely time being in that 10%.
Has he won you over then?
No. Okay. You know what's funny?
I
know
now that Bush's approval ratings is low, he loves the guy.
Now I got to take the other side because I'm a contrarian. You know what I mean? There's a lot of people I know that voted for George Bush that now are like, dude, I wouldn't vote for him again. But isn't it weird? I don't know anybody that didn't vote for him that's like, wow, he has really won me over with his honesty and integrity. I wish I could vote for that guy now.
Yeah. what do you think about the current primary process and the big Obama mania?
Yeah. I'm trying to figure that. Obama's, you know, he's like the Tiger Woods or like a Michael Jordan type of politicians, man. He doesn't really seem to have many cracks in his game. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I like it, man. I like he's the future, man. He's the next step of the evolutionary chart. He's a hybrid. You know what I'm saying?
He's a hybrid candidate.
Like Tiger or Halle Berry or Lenny Kravitz. You know what I mean?
He's got that thing down. I get you.
Right?
Yeah.
I like that.
That kind of talk makes Spikes nervous, no matter how true it is.
Why?
Oh, it's true.
Why does that make you nervous?
When you say, well, I never thought of them.
Dude's got friends at BET. We're
yeah,
covered.
I guess. Cool.
Yeah.
I never thought of one as mixed race as a hybrid, but that's makes perfect sense.
Yeah. I'm telling you.
Your honesty is liberating.
Hybrid is actually a nicer term
for
it because it's such a cool term these days.
Right, and if I'm making fun of him, I'm making fun of the white half, so don't get all worried about it.
Oh, dude, I got that. Believe me. Nobody's voting for his white half.
Yeah. I like that he's got that, you know, that hope thing going, and you know, but I did figure out how the Republicans can actually win the election.
Oh.
And here's what they got to do. If Bush comes out in support of the Democratic nominee.
If he endorses
this
Obama.
That's my boy right here. He's my man.
You jettison your anti-Bush material. You have a 3-year-old son now.
Yes, his name is Owen.
Owen.
Because that's what we figure we're going to be doing for the rest of our lives. Ba-doom-boom.
You know about the bell. You remember the bell.
Yeah, he's great, man. But any of y'all have children?
Oh, I got a 4-year-old girl.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. He's got an 8-year-old girl. Bob's got a couple of boys out of college.
My boys are in the mid-20s now. Oh, they're all gone.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're a lot of work, man. I wouldn't really. My wife and I met her wanting to have 4 or 5 kids. Now we have Owen, and she's like, this is it. You know, one day he'll be all like, why can't I be a big brother? Well, maybe you should have thought of that when you were one. You know, maybe.
You're the one.
Maybe you should have been more mean to your hand out of the dishwasher when we told you. You know what I'm saying? There's a reason babies are so cute. It's so you won't throw them in a dumpster at 3 a.m. The people that aren't laughing don't have kids.
So he's 3, and I assume by now potty trained and talking.
Oh, yeah. It was actually a weird thing, potty trained him, too, because you know how your in-laws want to tell you how to raise your kids or whatever? I don't know if this was...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. They always do.
Oh, and like last year he took a took a crap in his diaper. I don't know what word I can use. And I was like, oh, and let's go, man. You stink. We got to change. You got poo. And he's like, no poop, just pee. You know, he's running around. Don't want to be changed. So I'm like, come on, man. That's a lie. You stink. Come on. You're burning dad's nozzle. That stench. And mother-in-law's like, Tom, don't talk to Owen that way. You're going to give him a complex. Like, you know what, Evelyn, first of all, I want my son to have a complex about taking a dump in his pants. Okay? You're here. Yeah, that's not something I need him to be cool with later in life.
Comfortable with that. Yeah, right.
You don't want him to sit him down like a job interview later in life.
Hold on.
Like,
oh, you mind if I go to the bathroom? Thank you.
Did you just take a crap in your pants?
Well, yes, you said to make myself comfortable, and that's how I roll.
No poop, just pee.
Oh, this is my chair now. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. My wife told me, too, she wants to get a tattoo of his name like on her foot or her ankle or everything, which I think is cute, except I've known my wife 10 years, and she had no tattoos. So, you know, I'm kind of giving her crap. I'm like, yeah, baby, that's a good idea, but you know what? There's no Tom tattoo on you anywhere. And she just was a response. She goes, yeah, I know, but this is our son. This is permanent.
Oh,
yeah, I've definitely been relocated to second level.
Yeah, well, that happens. But now you travel a lot, right? And she stay home, and
yeah,
she stay
she stays
home,
home. Yeah, she's she has a home business that she runs. Two of them actually. So she does that
home business like online.
Yeah, mostly online. She sells like ad specialty, and then she also does like a makeup thing where she sells.
That's kind of neat that you can do that from home these days.
Yeah, it's cool. She used to try it from the motorhome when we were traveling around, but it didn't really work out.
Well, you would be in a different spot every day.
Exactly.
People come to find you. Move.
Yeah, sure, these speakers aren't stolen. No, I swear.
The only thing cool about it was, you know, I never had to worry about Jehovah's Witnesses living in a motorhome.
When you lived in
a
motorhome,
70 miles an hour, like, we got something to tell you about the Lord. Really, hitting the windshield wiper, tell it to the curb.
When you lived in the motorhome, you drove it to gigs, right?
Right.
So you were a family. You and your wife traveling around the country.
Right.
How did you find places to stay? Did you have a big guide or something? I've always found that fascinating. Or did you ever, do you have to stay in a place where you pay, or can you just pull over to the side of the road?
You can stay in Walmart parking lots. You can stay, Walmart lets you stay in those for free for a day
or
two.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. They're a safe haven for all campers.
Right. They don't have any hookups, but you know what I mean? They, as far as
right. So you have to go on your own generator and when the load,
Right. Flying J's were great for dumping a lot. You stay in state parks, and you can get a big book of RV parks. When you're driving around,
you can live pretty cheaply.
Well, yeah, it was at first. Gas prices were $1.45, when we started, and then they went through the roof. And
Oh, that's gonna be horrible for the motorhome industry.
Oh God, I guess.
Especially with all the retirees.
Yeah, I don't understand how people can afford to pay those things. The gas was just stupid. You know, it was like driving a Hummer around, which those idiots do.
You have a home now? Did you get a good subprime mortgage?
No. We almost did. We almost got a place in California with one of those, and then we decided we'd not to. And thank God.
Oh.
You know, so now we have an apartment, and we're saving money, and we're doing fine.
Are you still in Atlanta, or did you move to California?
We're getting ready to move back to Atlanta right now, where she was raised in North Carolina. So Atlanta's that's my home, you know. That's where
right.
That's where sports teams are and all that kind of stuff.
Atlanta?
Yeah. It was a tough year for
damn.
Michael Vick? Uh-huh. Where'd you come down? Did you have a bunch of positive Michael Vick material before this thing happened?
You did. Here's the thing about
Vick. Michael Vick is my best.
His approval rating was at 70%.
As a dog lover and a law-abiding citizen, I'm glad they threw the book at his arrogance, you know what I mean? But as a Falcons fan, come on, let him play, you know? Just work release on Sundays or something.
Right.
You know, dude's 90% of our offense. Come on. You ought to be able to fight dogs if you're awesome at quarterback. And here's the thing. We learned dog fighting's a sport in some parts of the culture.
That's what Whoopi said.
Yep. And people get mad when they hear that, too. They're like, that's not a sport. Those animals die in that sport. Well, hunting's a sport. That doesn't work out too good for the animal.
Right on.
At least the dog has a fighting chance.
Right on.
Right?
Yeah. One of them's not armed.
That's right. You know, and where's the line that we draw? There's hypocrisy. That's why I think I should have been his lawyer and taken it to trial, because there is hypocrisy. You know, think about it. Dog fighting's bad, sure. But cockfighting was legal till 2-3 years ago in a lot of states. You can go into a pet store right now and buy Japanese fighting fish. Let them go at it to the death.
You can.
We train human beings to fight and kill one another. The president gets to finish his contract. You know, I'm just saying. Where is the line? You know, actually, pit bulls are bred by human beings, so we created them for the purpose of being fighting animals, and now they do it, and you take away a guy's livelihood. You know, and 5-6 years ago, every time you turn on the news, there was a pit bull mauling and killing a kid, and you haven't heard about that in forever. And you know why? Because they've been fighting for Michael Vick. That's why.
Michael get him
Vick
off the street.
Cares about children.
All right, so get out of
him. And children are the military of the future. So if you don't support Michael Vick, then you don't support the troops, and I can't have it.
This is a great routine, and I'll bet in Atlanta you close with this, and the house is break down the house.
Number seven.
Yeah, it actually works a lot better in Atlanta than that.
Yeah. You and I both, I think, raised Catholic, right?
Yeah.
That would mean you have to have six kids.
No, we got one, and because I got out of the Catholic Church and was Episcopalian, so you know I don't know what that means.
Episcopalian is Catholic-like.
Yes, it
that's
really
Catholic
is.
With no sin if you don't go to church on Sunday.
Yeah, and now
remember,
I
had an Episcopalian friend, and I was like, "Why can't we be Episcopalian? They have fewer rules."
Right, they really did. It was actually the rule why we became Episcopalian because my mom got divorced and the Catholic Church said you can't, you're done, basically.
Excommunicate.
Yes. So
now, did you feel excommunicated too as her son, or did it matter to you?
It didn't really matter at the time. I didn't, you know. Now I think church meshes up your spiritual connection, but you know that's my opinion. But you know, the Pope's coming in to D.C. in April, Pope Benedict. Which,
it's a hot ticket too.
Yeah,
I hear
that's what I was reading yesterday.
Yeah.
See, even though you're not like a if you've ever been Catholic, isn't the Pope like still a big deal?
Yeah, especially this one, Pope Benedict. You know, that's cool.
Why
well,
he's going to do half the show as the Pope and the other half as
you stepped
Miley
on his
Cyrus.
Jokes.
That's all right.
You stepped on his joke. Pope Benedict. That's how I like my.
That
eggs.
Was really wasn't that great of a joke. I remember you being funnier than me anyway.
No,
so
no, no.
Here's the thing about Benedict. So he's got a lot of work to do to replace the old Pope, Pope John, right? Because he did a lot in his 20-year reign to bring the Catholic Church into the 18th century. And you know what I liked about him was he apologized for the Crusades, right? Which that's huge for the Catholic Church. The popes used to tell people if they killed for the Catholic Church that he would grant them amnesty and they'd get straight into heaven, which I think had to slow things down at St. Peter's Gate. You know, it's like, really? The Pope told you if you killed a bunch of people you could get in. Hold on, let me check. Yeah, hey, this is St. Peter. There's a bunch of people who said if the Pope said if they killed they could get right in. Okay, yeah, I'll tell him. Yeah, he says no frickin' way. That's my Pope material.
It's good stuff.
Hi-oh.
Wish you'd have stepped all over that.
Sorry, man.
I need a performance-enhancing drug for that material.
Let's talk a little about global warming. We have a song about global warming, and I understand you are one of those people. A lot of comedians would be skeptical about global warming, and it's probably easier to do skepticism on it, but you actually are concerned about it.
Well,
you think you're so concerned we should have a hybrid president.
Right, exactly. That's hilarious, dude. That's why he'll be. That's a good line. I'm going to use that.
It's feel
thank
free.
Thank you very
it's
much.
It's
I'm trying to write the Obama.
There's a tray on the way out. Take whatever you like.
Yeah, well, I believe it because it seems like, you know, all the climatologists believe it. I've never even heard of those people before, but they're obviously scientists. But I don't think terrorism is our biggest concern. I think we got bigger problems than that on the planet. We got racism and world poverty and global warming. The planet seems to be fighting back, right? It started a few years ago with the shark attacks, right? Then the mosquitoes started giving us encephalitis, and the birds got the flu, and the cows got mad. Now the spinach and the peanut butter's after us. You know, all these natural disasters, floods and hurricanes. That Louisiana Purchase doesn't look like such a great deal anymore now, does it? Yeah. Let's hope Jefferson saved the receipt on that bad boy. And here's why I'm scared, because Stephen Hawking, right? You all know Hawking.
Sure. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, they're really brilliant
guy.
Guy.
Yeah, he can only move like his pinky or whatever, but still he's smarter than like all of us combined. Anyway, he doesn't look good, though. I used to pray for wisdom, then I saw Stephen Hawking, and I was like, holy, there are some side effects of that wisdom. You can hang on to that, Stephen. I'm going to stay over here in Stupidville, if you don't mind. But he said that's it. He said human beings have no hope of surviving anymore on this planet because of the fact that we keep embracing war as a solution to our problems, and because of global warming. Hawking said that's it. Our only hope is if we colonize outer space, and I figured out a way to do that. Right,
here's colonize outer space.
We take all the drugs that we're all addicted to, right, prescription and illegal, and we jettison them to Mars and Saturn somehow, and then we just make a world announcement. We go, okay, everybody, drugs are legal, plentiful, and free.
On Mars. You have to figure out how to get there.
The drug addicts will get us there, right? That is an inventive
coming up
group
for 8 days
they
on this, but I got it all figured out.
We'll have like a rocket ship, man. I have an apple and a piece of celery by Tuesday.
The girlies say I'm pretty fly for a white guy. Ricky Lake, the actress you've seen in Hairspray, Serial Mom, Last Exit to Brooklyn,
and the long-running syndicated Ricky Lake Show has now gone behind the camera to become an executive producer. Ricky's new documentary, The Business of Being Born, takes an in-depth look at the process of birthing in America. Ricky Lake, welcome to the Bob Rivers Show. Hello.
Good morning. Well, thank you for having me.
Oh, our pleasure. How are you?
I'm good. I'm a little frazzled just because it's a typical, you know, Friday morning, getting my kids out the door, dealing with work. It's great. It's great.
Ah, so we don't have you like on a promotional tour.
I feel like I've been on tour since like last year when we were at the Tribeca Film Festival. But it's, you know, it's now, it's winding down. I think this is the last city. Seattle's the last city of our little, you know, limited run. Mm. And now it's on Netflix and it's coming out on DVD with New Line on May 6th. So, you know, it feels like this is a project of all the things I've done in my career that I am so happy to promote because I'm so behind the message of it.
Neat. Now, so, but we're talking to the Ricky Lake homebody rushing the kids off to school, Ricky Lake.
You are.
Yeah. How many and how old?
I have two. My oldest, his name is Milo. He's going to be 11 next month. And my youngest, Owen, is six. He'll be 7 in June.
Now, when your kids were born, Did you have the idea to do something like this then, or is it unrelated to your own experience?
Can you hold on? Someone's at my door. Hold on.
Sure.
Oh my God. Hold on.
No problem.
Okay.
Hold on. I know it.
She may have won $1 million from Publishers Clearinghouse. Wouldn't that be exciting?
That would be very fun.
You got to hear that with the gorilla suit and the balloons and everything?
Hi. Oh, my God. Can you see? This is like the homebody.
Yes, absolutely.
Like everybody coming in my house.
It's good we set it up this way. So now, was that Publishers Clearinghouse, Spike wants to know?
No, it's actually my hairdresser. I'm doing an EPK shoot for the DVD today. So he's here to do my hair, to get my weave going.
And you're doing that. Your weave on. Are you doing that in your house, the actual TV?
Yeah, he's coming to me today. Yeah.
It's just...
My makeup, you know, whatever. It's the life of, like, you know, a movie star, I guess. Normal day-to-day life. Just say that.
Are you plugged in all the time? You have a BlackBerry?
I have actually an iPhone.
Ew.
What? You made like a face.
Is going good for Ricky Lake.
Everything. Nice. Yeah.
iPhone.
I'm an Apple girl. Yeah. I am an Apple girl. So, yeah, I got my iPhone. I bought my iPhone. I was doing a movie in Canada, and I was leaving the next day, and, of course, they weren't available in Canada. I paid double for my iPhone. You know, now they're like $300. I paid like $9.99 because I had to have it on the set of this movie. It was crazy.
Neat. All right, my son has one, too. Now you're making us all feel left out. Hey, let's talk about the birthing process. Now, yes. Is this like Michael Moore's Sicko? Is this an expose of how bad it is in our country compared to the rest of the world or not?
I wouldn't say it's like a Michael Moore. I mean, I'm a big Michael Moore fan, but it's definitely got a different tone. I think it really shed some light on the birth industry, which it is an industry in this country. I don't think it really slags any one, you know, it's not really for one reason. It's not anti-doctor, anti-hospital. It's really anti the system. The system is not working. The maternal death rate in this country is way on the rise.
Is it?
And our infant mortality rate is the second worst in the developed world. And so these are horrifying statistics. And, you know, with the C-section rate going through, I mean, it's just going up and up and up every year. I mean, we get new numbers, and right now it's 1 in 3.
Is that because it's easier and more convenient for the doctor? I thought it was for the to have a lower mortality rate.
No, it's actually not safer for a low-risk mother to have a C-section. And what women don't know is when they have their C-section, for whatever reason, whether it's necessary or elective, you know, some women are choosing to have a C-section, thinking it's going to be avoiding pain or it's going to be easier on them, when in fact, for me, I mean, I think it's preposterous to assume having major abdominal surgery is going to be less painful than having a baby born the way it's supposed to be through your vagina. I mean, I can't imagine.
So are they doing it just, is this like bringing your car in for a tune-up and getting a whole clutch overhaul? I mean, are they over?
In some cases, you know, the malpractice premiums have reached a point where they are so sky high. Doctors are so afraid of being sued because really 86% of them will be sued at least one point during their career. You know, and we're talking that the situation is so bad with this litigious society that we live in that a child, you can sue up until that child is 18 years old. So if there's some issue that comes up when the kid is 15, they, you know, didn't score well on a test, I mean, theoretically, they can sue that doctor, go back to something that happened at the birth and say, this is the reason. And, you know, I mean, doctors are scared to death. So
even though the C-section is much more of a major surgery for the woman, it's less likely that someone will sue for something going wrong with the kid.
Right. Well, that's when they look at sort of, okay, if you did the C-section, that means you did everything else you possibly could have done. So, you know, that's safer from a litigious standpoint, not necessarily from the health of the mother and baby.
Well, that was the case with me, Ricky. My wife had a C-section, and they tried, you know, the conventional way, and it just wasn't going to work. I'm married to a little bitty woman.
Oh, good for you, Joe.
Yeah.
The thing is, also, I believe, you know, with me, with my second birth, it was at home. When you're free to move around, when you're not strapped to a hospital bed, when you don't have a fetal monitor across your stomach, when you're not, you know, hooked up to an IV, you can move. You can get up. You don't have that epidural where you're numb from the waist down. You can actually move, and movement and being able to stand up and be vertical helps get the baby out. You know, that, and I mean, the gravity is supposed to help, and it's really hard when you're, you know, in a hospital bed.
So for a few hundred thousand years, people were dropping them in the fields and getting back to work.
They were. So, I mean, really, it's not about hospital versus home. It's not about that. It's really about choices and knowing, empowering women to educate themselves that they have choices and to make the best choice for them. And we show images in this film of birth, of women giving birth on their own terms, whether it's in a birth center or at home, where these are images that people can't imagine can happen. You know, one woman gives birth in a tub. The baby falls out. I mean, she doesn't make a noise, and it looks like pain-free, and yet the baby just, like, appears, like it's like a magic trick. I mean, there's amazing images of birth, and I think that's what's really important, is to show.
You know, a lot of people, even the women, have no idea when they're having their first baby what to expect, do they, in our culture?
Yeah. No, and I think, you know, if we can look at it as a natural process and not the scary emergency waiting to be happen, you know, to happen, I think we can maybe change the system a little bit. You know, women, we are strong, we are kick-ass, and we can do anything. And I think for me, having had this experience, particularly my second birth, I feel like I can do anything.
It sounds like this is a movie that every woman who may ever have a baby should see, but it also sounds like a movie that I should sit in the other room and hand out a cigar while my wife watches.
I mean, I think men, it's amazing the reaction that we're getting, not just from women, but from men as well. And even, you know, gay men that don't even plan to have children, they are so moved by this. And that's what's been really surprising. I mean, I think it's a beautiful film. I'm so proud of it. I'm so happy that at least, you know, people do care of what has been my passion for the last, you know, 10 years. People seem to really take an interest in it. But I'm surprised at how many different types of people that don't even plan to have families of their own, are moved by this issue.
Casey
and
plans.
It's a woman's reproductive right issue, really.
Casey plans to have children. You have never told us how many.
I do. I want two. Now, you're telling me no on the delicious needle that numbs me from the waist down.
No, I'm not saying anything. I'm saying do what you want to do. Just go in informed. Know that, you know, there are risks. There are risks to everything. There are risks when you have that epidural that you're going to have a migraine for months. I mean, if it's not put in correctly, you could have, I mean, there's horrible, horrible things that can happen. It also.
She's telling you if you want a migraine for months and you're informed about it.
Or risk paralysis.
I did have an epidural, and at that time I needed it, and I was informed. I knew what the risks were, and I also knew I needed to rest in order to push my baby out and to not have a C-section. So I just want people to be informed. I don't want them to think, oh, you know, whatever.
They had one of those hot tub births on that new spinoff to Grey's Anatomy, and that looked like a fun way to go. In a hot
you
tub.
Do it then.
Was that hot tub conception or birth?
I'm one of those like junkies. I loved giving birth. I was a birth junkie, and I just, the minute my water broke, I was like, yeah, I was so psyched.
You were psyched about it.
Hello.
Yeah.
I love it. I wish I wanted to like raise more children, because then I would, you know, have so many more, because I love being pregnant so much.
Are you done with two, Ricky?
I think I'm done. Well, I'm a single lady now, and it does take two to make a baby. So, I think I'm going to be 40 in 7 months, and
that'll be it. Yeah.
I love that my kids are, you know, old enough. They're now just. I'm taking my younger one to England. The two of us are going to go to London, go visit Liverpool, and you know, it's like it's great that they're at this age.
Now you're not eliminating the possibility of a significant man in your life, are you?
No,
you're not writing our whole
like
half of the species off, are you?
No. I'm pro man.
You are pro man. Right.
Yeah.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
And looking.
Oh, so you are looking.
You are okay.
Yeah, I'm looking. I'm not desperately looking, but I'm looking.
You're not on Match.com. eHarmony.
No.
Ricky, I think you're wonderful. I've had a massive crush on you since you were the hugest you've ever physically been.
Oh, really?
Yes,
really?
Because
260. You thought I was hot.
You know what? It was Tracy Turnbull. I'm a huge John Waters fan. I'm a born and raised Baltimorean. My parents actually met on the Buddy Dean TV show, which is
oh
what the...
Oh, my God.
I swear
Let's
to God.
Danny Oceanhorn.
I'm telling you, hon, and Tracy Turnblad, when you were doing the Roach, I'm telling you, I fell in love with you, and I still to this day. I think you're wonderful.
Thanks. I mean, that was the summer of my life. I really had the most amazing, amazing experience making that film. I just saw John Waters last weekend. I had dinner with him with Johnny Depp and Patty Hearst, and who else was there? Melanie Griffith. Like all, right. Brought back all the old people from the movies over the years, and it was right. really, really fun, and it's like family, you know?
Ricky Lake, visit us in person sometime. Next time you're in Seattle, I'm going to put you on hold. You get our producer's number.
Okay, great.
Come by.